Live and in color from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful Southern California, and in parallel from the Turfs Up Radio Studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Thanks for tuning in to the Water Zone Show this evening.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Water Zone Show. I'm Rob Starr, along with Chris Stady, and we are the hosts of the Water Zone, and hope everybody's having a great day. It's beautiful out here in the Phoenix area. Mr. Davey, how is it out in California?
Good afternoon, Rob Starr, and everybody. It's just as fantastic out here as well, Rob. I'm happy to be on the radio today. Nice, just perfect weather and good weather for working out in your backyard, which is what I was doing prior to this.
That seems to be your passion. You like that. You do it
very well.
And as I've said on many shows, you got an awesome garden that you put together, and you grow things, and you're just good at that. You got the green thumbs for it. I do not. So I'm jealous of you for that.
It is fun. Got a lot of got some spring veggies coming up, and some putting some trellises up and things like that for some string beans, green beans, and so. Uh-huh. So I was busy. Of course, no rain here, and it doesn't look like there's any on the 10-day horizon. So it looks like those storms, those atmospheric rivers, are going to end. And by the way, I know you're going to introduce Chris in just a second, but I've got a question for her. I want her to comment first on the story on Maven's Notebook about 51 atmospheric rivers this year.
Well, we'll definitely get to her in a second and do that. You know, when I just came back and I didn't get to see you this trip coming back to California.
Yeah, it was a whirlwind trip for you.
Yes, it was. I was amazed driving in and, you know, feeling almost 90 degrees and looking out the window and seeing snow on top of the mountains. So it was kind of a beautiful sight. No clouds in the sky. It was gorgeous. So anyway, next time I'll get a little chance to spend more with you and we can get together. So let's bring Miss Chris Austin in, who is the purveyor of Maven's Notebook and the most wonderful water California person that I know. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, everybody. How you doing?
Very
good. How's the weather out in your end of Central California?
It's beautiful. It's nice. We too are planting our garden up here, putting in our veggies for the summer. We have an interesting season up here. You know, it gets very, very hot in the Central Valley, and we don't benefit from those coastal breezes that Southern California gets that roll in at like 5 in the afternoon and sort of cool everything down. Here, the heat can persist into the night. I was very interested to see what was going to happen with our tomato plants in particular, because if it doesn't cool sufficiently at night, the tomatoes don't ripen. Yeah. So we had this season last year where in the spring, before it got really, really hot, you know, up, let's say, into June and July, we had lots of tomatoes. And then when it got to the really hot months, they just kind of stopped. And the plants didn't die. The green tomatoes didn't die. They all just sort of sat there for about 6 or 8 weeks till the weather started to cool down. And when it did, it all ripened and it went back to blossoming and setting new tomatoes. And we were pulling tomatoes off into November.
Well, that's cool.
So, you know.
Well, my wife has a good idea about the tomatoes. She made me stop by Bristol Farms on the way home in Palm Desert to pick up heirloom tomatoes and strawberries to bring home, and then she'll start growing her tomatoes here. But you're right, they need to be a little bit cool sometimes to grow. So there's lots of news you wrote about that I caught up. But I'm going to let Chris start it off because I know he wants to talk about atmospheric rivers. Go ahead.
I do. That's the first question, but I'm going to tell you, I was watching TV yesterday, Chris. And,
oh, my word.
I don't do that a whole lot, but I was on CBS News, and they were talking about Sites Reservoir. Couldn't believe it on the news.
Well, there you go. Yeah, Sites Reservoir started their water rights hearing this week, I think it was, back at the beginning of the week, or it might have been last week. I was kind of surprised people picked up on it. I had it on the calendar and noted it, but it's kind of, this was a pre-conference hearing, and they're going to be working on the water rights application, probably up into 2025. The kind of situation, as California water rights law goes, is you have to post a notice, and then anyone that feels that, you know, that they might be impacted by that can file a claim against that petition in a protest. And so, of course, there's lots of protests filed, so they'll be resolving that and working on granting them water rights. I think this is a new reservoir that's broadly supported. It's out, it's not across a river. It's what we call an off-stream reservoir, so it's less impactful. It has a lot of people interested in participating and backing that up with money, so it's being paid for. For me, it's kind of hard to see, you know, where the problem really lies. This is the kind of project that the scientists are saying we need to do. We need to be able to store water on the valley floor, not up in, you know, Shasta Dam or wherever. We have the dams up in the mountains and they do their job. It's the water that falls on the valley floor that we need to be capturing. So, you know, it's got a lot of momentum. I kind of think that it will get all resolved and will go on to construction, although, you know, people still won't like it, but, I think it's a reservoir worth building, but that should not be construed as taking a position, because I do not take a position. So if you heard a position there was no position there.
That's a good disclaimer. Great disclaimer, Chris. But I mean, you know, California, in particular, California water rights are complex, right? I mean, if, you know, for everybody. I think they said a bit tricky in the report, actually. And of course, there's absolutely no wiggle room, right? They're strict as heck. So. But I agree with you. I think it's going to go forward.
Yeah, and, you know, the main complaint, the complaints that the environmentalists have, is one of the general complaints is that, you know, water is very strictly controlled in California. We have all these systems and we have these rules and regulations and dams and everything all over the place. And generally when everyone operates that system in the manner that they want, it means that there's not a lot of water for the ecosystem. So the ecosystem kind of gets these bursts of really wet years, and that's good for the ecosystem. You know, nature is kind of used to disturbances. That's kind of part of life. So, you know, a good big flood every now and then into, you know, the environment of the Central Valley is actually a good thing for the ecosystem. So, you know, they're saying, you know, the environment gets such little water nowadays, and now you're coming to take that water too. And they also debate whether there's enough water to fill that reservoir. And I guess, you know, there is a lot of question, because this reservoir is going to capture high flows on the Sacramento River. So when are there high flows, and how do you define those high flows? You know, so they do have some complaints, some valid, I guess, you know, they're valid complaints, but I think that we need to be, you know, working on our infrastructure system. So we need to be considering projects like this.
I agree.
Well, going back to Chris's initial question on the storms, the consecutive atmospheric river events coming through that.
Yeah, there were certainly a lot now, weren't there? And it didn't, you know, it kind of didn't seem that there were as many as there were. You know, it and there were less AR storms hitting us this year than there was last year, but they just hit in some very impactful places, I think. And most of them steered north into the Pacific Northwest and
right.
British Columbia, which is a real problem because they're not really prepared for those kinds of extreme rainfall events, you know, because they didn't really have a lot of experience with that. But, you know, the jet stream is changing. Things are, you know, moving around. So, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Everyone gets to get ready. You know, I'm working on writing up an article of that Michael Anderson, the state climatologist, said, a presentation at the California Irrigation Institute conference. And he said, you know, this is not the new normal. We're just getting started. You know? So, and unfortunately, it's very true. So, you know, it's going to be, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty as to what's coming ahead. But, it, you know, infrastructure projects they take a long time to happen. So you need to be preparing now.
I was just going to say, I think a couple of things I took away from it is that, you know, they were saying that for as long as they've been tracking these storms coming in, 70 plus years or so, right, these last couple of years have been the longest duration of continuous AR, atmospheric river conditions, since then. But when you get, you know, the heavy hitters at Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory kind of working on this stuff, you know, that tells you that these guys, you know, aren't going to let this one just, you know, swing through the doorway, right? They're going to pay some attention to it.
And they've been doing some really good work. You know, we have a group down out of Scripps Oceanography called the Center for Western Water and Weather Extremes, headed up by Dr. Marty Rouse. And he's been really on that cutting edge, I think, him and that center, as to tracking these atmospheric rivers. And they developed an index, much like hurricanes, that kind of give you the idea of the intensity of the storm that's coming towards you. Because, you know, not all atmospheric rivers are the same. Some are much, much stronger than others. So they've been working to, you know, have that metric to tell you how, you know, give you an idea of what's coming at you. And they've also been working to be able to predict where they're going to hit land. That's been a bit of a challenge. I think they're getting better. I can remember last year, not this last water year, but the year before, the big wet year, they had a big warning about atmospheric river coming in, and they wanted nobody to travel, and there were signs all over the place, and they really thought it was going to come up here to Northern California. I had to drive down to the Bay Area as I helped my sister with a medical appointment, and so I had to travel on that day, and there were signs up there saying, don't travel, big storm, and, you know, blue sky. But it turned out that storm went and hit on the Central Coast, and that's when we had the problems in Santa Cruz and Pajaro, where the levees broke, and the farm worker towns that they're still trying to get fixed. So, you know, these storms are big deals, and we're really working on trying to understand them more so that we can plan and manage them when they come.
Yeah, so Rob and Chris, another real interesting thing you guys saw in the news the last couple of days, all that rain that happened in Dubai, right? And there's an interesting chart that you had that came out that said that they were falsely accusing the United Arab Emirates, the authorities there, of cloud seeding, and that's why it rained so much. Did you see that,
yeah.
Rob?
No, I did not.
Yeah,
that's an interesting thought, though.
And there were some rumors after there was a big storm in your area, Chris Davey, and people you know, started, because it sort of coincided with the time that the Santa Ana Watershed Project Authority put out a press release that they were starting a cloud seeding program, and then there's this big rain thing, and so there were some people that were saying that was the cause of it, but no, not really. Wouldn't it be nice, you know, if it was that easy, you know, wouldn't it be nice?
Well, I had read, I didn't read that article, but I did read something a while back talking how governments are looking how to control weather for warfare.
Well, I don't know. I don't really read up on that kind of thing.
I got another one of what you were writing about, but I think we're going to turn it into a movie.
The Wrath of Chromium 6.
It already had a movie. I'm sorry. Aaron Brockovich beat you to it.
I know, but there has
to be a sequel.
Yeah, no, you know, here come the drinking water regulations for all the nasty stuff that's in there, and hexavalent chromium would be one of those things. Also, so that story was the state water board setting a limit for hexavalent chromium in state water systems. And earlier in the week, the EPA set limits for PFAS in nationwide limits. Now, PFAS are, you know, these chemicals, they're back, you know, date back to the Teflon. Remember, I'm dating myself here, but, you know, you remember when we first came out with Teflon, and then all of a sudden Teflon left the market. You know, these PFAS chemicals, they're just everywhere. So, and one of the problems is that the EPA standard is for 6 specific PFAS chemicals, but there's like, you know, 150,000 variations of this.
Right.
And this is a problem that we have with regulating contaminants, because by the time we can nail it down to one specific contaminant and run the tests and say, okay, this, and get and go through the regulation making, you know, they've moved on to something else, and it has a whole new set of impacts. People that work on this refer to it as the hamster wheel. You know, it just never ends.
Well, yeah, I heard that on the news this morning driving back, and, you know, they're talking about what it's going to cost the individual homeowner. And one person said it was going to be 500% times of what they think it was going to be, yet they're trying to publish that it's, at least you put in here, 87% of the people will pay $8 a month, and then so most people will pay $20 per month.
And, it's going to cost money, folks, but, I mean, you just want to shrug your shoulders and you know, continue to drink it. It's not a good thing. And one of the problems with PFAS is that they haven't really found a good way to get rid of it yet. They have a lot of people looking into it, and they have some bacterial things and stuff, but we have a ways to go to really understand that chemical and what we can do with it and do about it.
These problems have been going on for a long time. It's not something somebody just found out about.
Yeah.
You know, just like all the lead that's in water in all parts of the country and all these other contaminants.
PFAS is relatively new. There were rumblings about it back when Trump was president, and when there was going to be a big report coming out that was going to freak everybody out, and then finally they released the report and it freaked everybody out. It takes time.
Yeah, but the lead and the chromium 6 has been around for a long, long time. I remember when in early discussions almost 9 years ago when we started the show, we were talking about the water from Cadiz in San Bernardino County, and they were trying to pump water to deliver to West Metropolitan Water, and there was a big hoop-de-doo about that. So I mean, it's not those aren't new; they've been around for a long time. Is it really that there isn't enough people and money to take care of the problems that they've found out about for the last 20 years? I mean, it just seems it takes forever.
Well, yeah, because they discover a problem, okay, then they have to do tests, and then they determine there's a problem with this chemical. So then they have to put out a notice and say, we're going to do something about this chemical. Then everybody will, you know, all the people that use that chemical then get a chance to protest, and they do. And just the whole process of getting through, because, I mean, because now you say, here's a chemical, it's a problem. Now you have to test, okay, so where does it come from? How did it get where it's at? What can we do about it? I mean, there's a lot of work that has to be done once you've identified a problem. And regulations come slow, and they're highly contested.
All good points. You're absolutely right.
I think a thing to think about, Rob, just and you guys also, is, and you know, seems like everybody and their brother, aunts, uncles, sisters, and pets are getting into the PFAS extraction business, right? And I listen to a lot of podcasts. There must be two dozen different types of technologies that are being discussed. Everything from, you know, reverse osmosis to screens to different filtering systems and pressurize this and pressurize that. So it's got a lot of attention right now, guys.
Yeah.
It does, and you know, we'll see where it goes. One of the big problems is that the manufacturers were told to use something different, you know, find an alternative, and they kind of came back and said, oh, well, there really is no alternative, which, you know, could be very well true. But then what does that mean going forward? You know, so we're just going to continuously allow the contamination. I mean, it's a real issue. And then the thing is, too, that if they do find an alternative for PFAS, you know, what sort of problems will that cause? Because they
You got to validate and do more tests over time to determine what the long-term effects are going to be.
You do, you know. So it's a very tough issue, and I don't think it's going to be going anywhere anytime soon. In fact, you're going to see it pick up as our ability to detect chemicals in our environment increases.
Yeah. Well, we're coming up against our commercial break, Miss Austin, and I got to get grab a hold of you, not physically, but to.
Yeah, that's against the law, you know.
Yeah, I know. That's why I clarified that. I'm too old to go to jail. Anyway, we got to have you on for a whole hour one time so we can go through some of these things in deeper thoughts, because you've got so much knowledge and things, what's going on behind the scenes, that really want to pick your brains on these things. And, you know, we do appreciate you come on and do the whole segment with us, but we got to plan in the next couple of weeks that take a little bit more time. And I'll send you a credit card so you can go out to dinner with your hubby, and that'll cover you, so you won't have to cook for the evening. And then maybe you can give us a little bit more time, because you got so much information that I just want to hear it more and more and more. And it's like now I got to wait till tomorrow morning to find out what you're going to write. So, so anyway.
Well, sounds like a plan.
All right.
So, Chris, put it on the schedule.
Well, we will. And for our listeners, please go to mavensnotebook.com. I say this every single week, and I will never stop. Please go there and get the best water information that you can on what's going on around California. You can also become a subscriber, and it's a great way to get your information every single morning when you wake up. It's right on your PC ready, or laptop, or phone, or whatever. And it's a great way to learn more. And I just can't imagine, the hours that you put into doing what you do. But you do an awesome job, Chris. We love you very much.
All right. Well, thank you. Love you too, guys.
All right. Cool. You have a good week. All right. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with a featured guest. So stick around, and we'll be right back.
out there, you're on your own. Do more. Do it faster. Do it better. The work is tough, and building an experienced team is even tougher. The moment you've got the game figured out, everything changes. It's hard to know where you stand, but in here, you'll find your footing. It's a place that's as much a community as it is a store. A place where knowing you and your business go deeper than simply knowing your name. A place where the solutions aren't limited to what's on the shelf, and the experts behind the counter pride themselves on going beyond the call. In here, you'll find people who see eye to eye, who stand shoulder to shoulder, who work side by side to build things, great things. In here, you'll find common ground. We are Site One, stronger together.
Get down, get funky. No walks in the water zone show. We're having a great time here. And just laugh at it. I see Chris on the video link, and he always makes me laugh. I can't tell you what he's doing, but it makes me laugh. Anyway, we have a great guest. His name is Chris Willis, and this is a good story for people to listen that work for smaller little companies. And he happens to be in the landscaping and irrigation business, but he has an interesting story of how he took that early experience and what he has now as a company that's huge. And it's a pretty interesting story. So for those listening, take some advice from him. He's a pretty good guy, and he's turned out to be really successful. So here it is.
Hi, I'm here with Mr. Chris Willis, and he's president of a company called CTM, and that stands for Colorado Total Maintenance. And Chris, welcome to the Water Zone Show. We appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us, we're here at Pro Green, and it's a nice show, but people want to know, how did you get into this industry? When you were born, was that somebody said, this is what you're going to do, or did you have something else before you came doing what you're doing?
Well, that's an interesting concept, and I often think about that, is I didn't choose the industry chose me. So like every 20-year-old or 21, 22-year-old, you don't know what you're going to do with your life. So I was attending a community college.
I mean, no parties or anything like
that? Well, you know, a little bit here and there. Yeah. But I was attending community college, and I was delivering pizza part-time at the time, and it was probably the best money possible because you were working 20 hours a week, delivering pizza, and then you were you got as much paid as a 40-hour job week somewhere else. But I got to be really good at routing, so when people would take one pie, I would take three pies and come back and I'd make money. So then I was living with my parents at the time, and one day I heard this rumbling sound, and I look over up the street, and there was an army of aerators that were coming up the street. Narrator is right, and I'm like, wow, look at that. Well, some of them were going door to door, and some of the people were aerating, so they were hitting, canvassing the neighborhoods, and $25 for an aeration and stuff. And my mom's like, hey, why don't you do that? And I'm like, that's a grand idea.
Yeah.
So I incorporated that thought into pizza delivery. So, hey, here's your pizza. By the way, are you interested in aeration on Saturday? Because that's where I'm starting. So I kind of did the same thing, and that's how I got started in it pretty much. And then one thing led to the next, and somebody asked me, do you mow lawns? And I'm like, yeah, you have a lawnmower I can borrow? I'll mow your lawn. And that's how it worked. That's how I got into it. And it was a whirlwind, because I didn't have any really experience. I learned everything through the school of hard knocks.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
That's a good story. So tell us what CTM does. I mean, I know it says Colorado Total Maintenance.
Well, CTM's been around. It was incorporated in 1994, so we're celebrating 30 years this year. We do everything from maintenance, which is landscape grounds maintenance, to landscape construction, which is parks, mm-hmm. which is fields, not really any residential, more a commercial setting or a government setting, and then snow removal and irrigation. We manage water.
Excellent. So you're here at Pro Green. This is the first time I've ever been here. Mm-hmm. With all 17 years at Toro, I never had the opportunity to come here. I do a lot of other ones, but I never came here. What do you get out of this show? What's good for you that you're attending here?
Well, the relationships. It's interesting because I've been coming for, you know, like I said, for about 30 years now. And I've seen it change a little bit. I've seen players come and go and people, but, you know, there's a lot of relationships here. Now I'm considered an old timer, even though I don't feel like it. You know, but I see some people who are older than me still here, but I get a chance to talk to the people and, hey, what's going on, and find out some stuff. But what's really good is kind of the seminars and the presentations, particularly the ones that are put on by CSU, Colorado State University, because they are the top-notch horticulture, landscape, architectural school in the nation. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of good information that gets presented, and I always like to find out what's going on. Good doctors. You know, I just visited one guy. He did a seminar on Japanese beetle, you know, and he makes it very colorful and interesting because it's a big pest out here, and everybody wants to know how you get rid of it.
He didn't tell you how to cook it, did he?
No, but he told me you can blend it up in a blender. I was like, oh, that doesn't sound good.
A lot of companies, they make cooking flour, are made out of mealworms and things like that. And, you know, I went to a state fair in California, and they had a whole session on a guy cooking all kinds of live insects and stuff, and it was kind of interesting. You know, what I find funny, because I travel a lot all overseas, maybe about 40 different countries, what we think is yuck, you know, it's common food to some people over there. And, you know, I know there was in Orange County, California, years ago, they were upset about, I won't mention the nationality, but they used to go in there and buy a bunch of dogs, and they used it for food. And it's Asian food, okay? But a lot of people in California thought that was disgusting and bad, but that's what people raised on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my grandparents came from Europe, and if you got a chicken, you ate every part of inside, outside, and everything else. I mean, that was in their stews and stuff, because things were tougher then back in the Depression and all that stuff. So it's a whole new world, but there's a lot of cooking with insects.
Yeah.
I wasn't making a joke when I asked you, did he do anything with the cooking? Because that's a big business. And now they're using that stuff, like I said, for flour. So aside from that, where do you see, has the water and the drought and the conservancy of all of that stuff been tough for your business? Has it affected in any way? You know, do they want you to cut the grass more the same what you were doing, or now that they're not watering it so much, does it grow that fast so they don't need to trim? Is that cutting back on business? I mean, does those things affect your kind of business?
Well, I mean, you know, our maintenance program consists of complete maintenance. We don't just mow. We take care of mowing, pruning, fertilization, as well as weed control, as well as irrigation. So the irrigation is, first off, you know, irrigation is the most prominent thing that everybody sees right away. They will see dry spots, you know, or they will see wet spots. You know, those are the first things they see. So to me, irrigation has always been on the forefront of everything. You control irrigation or be able to understand it, which means putting the right amount of water down that is required for the plant
and
to thrive.
Not mixing rotors and spray heads on the same valve.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because I do have some that are like that, but there's a reason behind it. Because I have some areas that are grass, open grass areas, right, that have rotors, and then I have some areas under trees, big trees with extensive roots, that need more water for the same amount of time. But, you know, it used to be where the grass would die out,
because
rotors put about a half an inch an hour, and the spray heads put about an inch and a half. Since I changed them to spray heads, I got consistency now. So it all matters, and I understand that's the basic philosophy, but it all
each application is different.
Right, and you got to use it like that. But yeah, theoretically, yeah, you don't want to do that.
Yeah. What in your industry, our industry actually, made a difference in your business and to your clients?
I think the ability to do what it takes to get the job done. You know, it's not a 9-to-5 job. It is, you know, there's always more to do the next day, but you've got to put your best effort into it. And sometimes your best effort doesn't produce the best results, but you learn from it. And that was the thing. I learned everything really pretty much the hard way, but the right way at the same time. I learned how to do it the right way and what to do as follow-up.
Yeah, Greg Faster, you know, said you have a great reputation, and I was real interested in talking to somebody who has a great reputation to do stuff. What technology contribute to any of your continuing success in your business or helped you in any way?
Well, good question. I use, I've always been a techie and I've always been messing around with things. So on the construction side, I use drones. I got into doing as-built. Like I do big irrigation systems for Denver Parks would be my biggest client. And it's like, okay, how do you do an accurate as-built without going out and measuring from point A to point B with everything? So it was, I think 2006, I believe. Yeah, it was that long ago. Wow. That seems forever. where one of the first drones, DJI drone, came out. It was a Phantom 3. And then they just released the Phantom 4, which had GPS infrastructure inside the drone itself. And so basically you can send it up and you can correlate a map with it or a flight pattern. And it will take these pictures and then you stitch them together post-processing. So you get one big picture that's digitally GPS, and you can overlay that on a survey and you can go back and pinpoint everything. And so you get an accurate as-built.
Yeah.
Of course, it took five times as long as it should have because I was learning how to do it at the same time. A lot of frustration, but I was able to incorporate that into future projects down the line.
But customers love to see that.
Oh,
too.
They love seeing drone shots. And what's even good about it is you can overlay it on like Google Earth, which is a KMZ application right there. You just overlay it and you can see a current picture of what it looks like, which is really cool. So I use drones constantly. Of course, I've crashed a few of them. One of them flew off to North Korea. I never saw that again, and stuff like that. So, but it's a lot of fun. Other technologies, I'm really into, central controls, irrigation central controls. Right away when it first came out, when I first got in this industry, there were a couple things that I was very intrigued with. One was subsurface drip irrigation, and the other one was central controls. Wow, that sounds great, being able to control a controller from a computer or a remote site. Wow, turning it on and off, setting a program. Yeah, back then it was a computer, but it's obviously the technologies involved. So those were the two things that I really got heavily in. Subsurface drip irrigation for turf was a big thing I went through to understand how that works.
Is two wire popular out here?
It is for long runs. I mean, it makes sense. Yes. But if you do short runs and stuff like that, then it doesn't. But most of our commercial projects that we've done do require two wire.
How about a wireless valve?
It's very interesting because
people are talking about that. So.
But it's very interesting because Greg Fast approached me a few years, maybe 15 years ago. He says, "We got this wireless flow sensor here." And I'm like, "Good, I'm the guinea pig." So we put it in one of our sites out there. The controller was across the street. The wireless flow sensor was right here. And we were trying to get it to communicate. We get it to communicate, but the readings would come back flawed. And we're like, "What the heck is going on?" Well, it turns out that the clock and where that was at by the tap was a stoplight. So what would happen is when the irrigation was running, the stoplight would stop the cars, disrupt the signal, and give us inaccurate information. So we're like, wow, this is weird. But, but it was trial and error, and a lot of it's trial and error. But I love being the, not necessarily the guinea pig, but partner and figuring out, what works and what doesn't.
Well, flow sensors have changed over, obviously, technology changes from paddle wheel technology all the way up to the ultrasonic now, which is the best way to go. There's other ones in between. They use what's called a Wheatstone bridge, which measures the difference between and calculates a number. But yeah, I mean, what used to take 20 years for new technology is like every 6 months. It's unbelievable. I mean, when you think of your cell phone, I'm from an era where I saw a Sperry Univac computer that was the size of this room, and it was punch cards.
Yeah.
And you put in a question, and 1,000 cards come out, but you only need this one card that gives you the answer to it.
Wow.
And it was a noisy thing, kept in a frozen room because you needed all the air conditioning to do it. Now you got as much on that as that on a cell phone.
Yeah, it's dangerous.
it's amazing. So a lot of your big projects, obviously, from the sounds of it, you would certainly use a central control system.
Yes. My preferred one for the properties we maintain is a Rainmaster. It's iCentral, right. iCentral Plus. We have installed Toro Sentinels. Those are for basically Denver parks where they're spec'd.
Right.
A lot of the park projects are specified.
I've seen many of those go out of the building.
Yeah. Those go in.
The
and
green
stuff like
cabinets.
That. Yeah. stainless steel now for some of them we put in, but that's what we do. But for choice, you know, I met up with Greg about, you know, 20 some odd years ago, and that in that 20 years, that's when I first met him, and I installed my first clock, my Rainmaster Central Control, at a place called Stapleton. It was at the time, it's been changed to Central Park now. It was the old airport facility. And I put it in, and that clock is still working and still communicating with iCentral.
That's great.
Yeah, so it's been, you know, the thing that's been interesting with it is there hasn't been a lot of change to the infrastructure in it. It's been updated, but it's been very reliable. And I like the reliability and consistency. That's key in any technology.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's the number one thing. I went out and did some training on the new DXi one. That's a pretty interesting controller. But I think there's lots of companies I would say are good at what they do. Even some of my competitors, I tell them, hey, I think you've got a really nice product and stuff. And, you know, we all the engineering people know us all. Like on the SWAT committees with the EPA and the IA, they didn't want to have any engineers on the committees. They only wanted marketing people.
And interesting.
Why don't you want something that people know about and we can all talk about it? One water agency, and I won't mention it because I don't want to get in trouble. This is years ago. They had a proposal to the SWAT and EPA that they wanted everybody to build. Here's the schematics for and parts list for a smart controller. Everybody should manufacture that particular one. And I said, why would we, if it's our product, why would we give up our technological information to my competitor to build our controller? Well, it's that way everybody has the same thing. No, you want the competition because everybody does a little differently. And I think the competition keeps everybody on their heels to keep developing something better and better and better and better. But this one big water agency, that's what they wanted. And it obviously didn't fly. But that's a scary thing that we're going to give up our intellectual property and everybody's going to build exactly the same machine. I don't think that's going to work.
That sounds like communism a little bit.
Yeah, it does. So has the effect of water being more in mind of people and they want more, I don't like to use the word conserve because that sounds like a government word that they're pushing down your throat. I like to use the word use water more efficiently.
And wisely,
Yeah. Have you seen more of a crackdown on water? I mean, I know Denver's very big green thing, but has that affected you in any way, your type business?
Well, you know, once again, one of our properties we maintain has a lot of parkways and a lot of avenues, drive lanes and things like that. So we have a lot of exposure. This one property has 220 taps and 240 clocks, and it's spread out over a period of probably 7 times 7, you know, 20 square miles of what we got to take care of. 7,000 trees, you know, I mean.
And you got different microclimates, I'm sure.
All kinds of stuff. So, you know, we're constantly, what people notice about water is, number one, is if it's running on the street. Mm-hmm. That's the number one thing people will see. Oh my God, it's running on the street. You're wasting water. It's the first thing they see. However, you know, what happens is, you know, we get a lot of car accidents and a lot of things, people running over valve boxes, stuff like that, that we've got to respond to. So we're always looking for water on the street. And if it's not visible, and we try to run it in our watering windows, if it's not visible, then people won't see it. But people automatically assume that you're wasting water or you're watering during the day. You see a sprinkler on during the day. They're wasting water. They're watering during the day. Well, maybe that valve is stuck. You know, we get a lot of stuck valves, and that's why we constantly have an army of technicians that are moving around and trying to make sure that everything is working optimally.
Or you get dirt underneath the thing, sealant doesn't shut, or you have a solenoid that goes out, or you get something runs over and cracks it. I mean, there's not much that can go wrong with a valve, I mean.
Oh, all lots of things.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things is the community still being built out. Like, the infrastructure was put in place before buildings were put in place, like retail areas, commercial areas. So now what's going on is that this infrastructure is being disrupted to put these buildings in. And these contractors aren't necessarily the most keen individuals. So they get in, destroy things, and we got to fix it, you know, but they don't tell you until you just find out when you're doing it. Oh, I'm sorry, I ripped through that coil of wire that was 20 strand right there. I put it back together for you, though.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure you did. Now zone one's here, zone two's on the other end of the site, you know, and stuff like that.
A lot of people who are, I call them the mow and blow guys.
Yeah.
They basically do what they want to do. They don't match the heads or the nozzles with each other. Because even if it's an 8-foot half, use a different nozzle. It's close, but it may not be. You know, different brands do little different things. Or even in the spray bodies, they say, ours is a 4-inch. Well, or no, it's not. You know, it could be a 5.5, or it could be. You never know. You see all those differences between the companies. So,
some of the things we did, which was really interesting, is, you know, at the time, all 4-inch heads were being put in. And we were one of the first people to say, you know, 4-inch heads don't do it. We need 6-inch heads. So we started putting in 6-inch heads everywhere, replacing all the 4-inch heads. And we got them to change the specification out to 6-inch heads. Well, first off, because when 4-inch heads get pushed down like all spray heads do, they won't rise.
That's right.
All the way. 6 inches gives you that little bit of cushion right there. Yeah. So it does. So we start changing that out.
Well, you also, depending on the vegetation that you're going to water, because things grow, and, you know, so they'll put in little boxwoods, for example, put in a 4-inch spray. Well, guess what? 2 years later, it's not going anywhere. So interesting.
One of the things, too, that I've seen evolve is, you know, this whole project out there, Stapleton, was getting built out over the years, and it's still not completed. We got other phases that's going on, but we've had every architect, every type of irrigation component specified by different people, so we've seen it all. One of the things is the drip. Okay, drip is people think drip is the most efficient irrigation, and in theory it is, mm-hmm. as long as it's done right. Now, I'm a big proponent of inline drip emitters, because less moving parts, less parts put together,
yes.
exposure to sun doesn't, you know, as we know, polypipe will expand and contract.
Yes.
And if you have like traditional drip where you have an emitter plugged into a pipe with spaghetti pipe with stake, too many components to break.
That's right.
And so I'm converting. I convert a lot of stuff to
people who dig a lot can do that. So you put in hard pipe and
right.
do it off that way. Yeah, drip's interesting. I mean, you can take a look at most in drip stuff, whether they have a single emitter or a dual emitter. Is it pressure compensated? I mean, you can get really involved in,
mm-hmm.
in saying just the thing. Plus how you plant. You know, if you buy drip tape that's or tubing, and it's 1 foot or 2 foot or 18 inches, whatever, you got to plant kind of near that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they just plant wherever they want. And then you want to go get a custom one. You can get custom made, but that costs you a fortune to do. So it's, you got to understand how to do it and what's the maximum length you can do it on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people don't know that what they can do. There's companies that sell, like ours, that sell, I'm not trying to push our product, I'm sure you know about it, has the root guard in it, so it prevents roots from. I mean, there's so many different things that everybody has, and that's what I think competition does for the industry. I think it helps it, because if one company can do this, then somebody else certainly can figure out how to do that or better, and keeps one, you know, what do I call it, wanting somebody up. You know,
mm-hmm.
here, you're here, and I'm going to be here, and I'm going to be here. So, anyway.
Keeping up with the Joneses, yeah. and becoming the Smiths.
That's right. I like that. So how do people reach you at your company? How can they find you?
Well, you know, so we don't do work for the general public.
No.
We do. We've got, you know, maybe 5 customers. But in those customers, like, one of our biggest clients is Denver, which
right.
we really appreciate working for. But through Denver, we do many different things. Denver Parks, Denver Forestry, Denver Buildings.
So maybe there's some big commercial buildings that are going to come up. Say AT&T builds a big factory here or somebody else, and they need to know about you.
Right. We have a website, coloradototal.com. You know, you can come see that. We're always looking for good people, you know, to help maintain and help become better knowledgeable in this industry and stuff like that.
Two last questions. Do you believe the irrigator should be licensed like they do in Texas?
That's a very good question. That's a very good question. I'm not sure I know all about the licensing right there. I do believe there needs to be more education in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it would make sense. Like, backflow testers need to be licensed and stuff like that.
Right.
Electricians need to be licensed. And then the CLT test, or, you know, being an irrigation auditor, I mean, that needs to be tested.
Yep.
But to repair a head, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't think that that's a requirement. But more advanced, like water management
right.
aspects of
right.
things, there needs to be further education on that. Whether it's a licensure or not, I'm not sure. But there definitely needs to be more education.
Okay. And the last question is, if somebody came to you, this Colorado came to you, the governor says, you know what? You do an outstanding job. Chris, we need to have somebody who can be the czar of water.
Oh, boy.
What's the first three or top three things that you need to fix?
Well, first off, I would say absolute power corrupts absolutely. So I wouldn't want to be a top czar of anything, pretty much. I think education, but I think there's a lot of avenues of education out there of how to apply water to plants correctly or landscapes correctly,
right.
And what water is. And then educate them, where does our water come from? You know, that's a big thing, because I think the more information people have will be better. And then having bluegrass isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's a good thing, as long as you put the water down that's required of the grass. Because I think grass is nice. I love grass.
I love it, too.
In the right areas. Yes. You know, but I don't want this place.
I don't want on the medians and places that's, you know, it's non-functional to me. So.
Right.
But I want it for my grandkids to play on and have a nice backyard. You smell that fresh cut grass and stuff like that. So, well, hey, thank you for taking the time and stopping by and doing this. We appreciate that. And I'm glad you were recommended by Mr. Fast for me. And
he's one of my friends, so.
He told me that. And he said you're one of the best in the business.
Well, so good. Thank you. That's a good compliment coming from him.
So thanks again. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Rob.
Well, that was a good conversation with Chris. And like I said, he started out learning about the business and wound up owning his own business and doing really, really well. And that's, you know, Chris and I talked the other day. I've been communicating with a gentleman's company named Mike Rowe. Most of you have probably heard about him on a TV show called Dirty Jobs. And, you know, his comment is, you don't have to go to college to make $100,000 or $200,000. You can be a welder. You can be a landscaper. You can do anything. The best way to do is start out with a company, learn all the things from the bottom up, and then either you take control of that company or you get to be smart and start your own. And that's what Chris has done. He's got a very, very successful business. You know, having all the parks and recreation for the city of Denver is nothing to shy away from. I mean, that's good money.
No, Chris Willis was a great interview, and full disclosure to our listeners, Rob, you did that interview solo without me, because I wasn't there when you were in your trip to Colorado.
I wasn't trying to cut you out of it. I wasn't trying to cut you out of it either.
Super interview, and you and I have been to Colorado, specifically the Denver area, many, many times. It's an expansive place. There's a lot of green areas. There's a lot of stuff to take care of. It's a progressive town in terms of conservation and sustainability, so you've always got that factor involved in it. I thought it was just awesome. I thought it was a great interview. Good job, Rob. And two thumbs up, buddy.
Well, I appreciate it. You do the same when I'm not around, and that's what makes the show great. You know, you got some dynamite questions, and you know, I'll use the term you use, boilerplate questions sometimes, and that's important, because you get different answers from different people in their different situations. So it's pretty interesting. Chris.
As I said before, Rob, you know, if all of us thought the same, wouldn't that, how boring would that be?
Very boring. Still like that. But anyway, got plans for the rest of the weekend, Chris, coming up?
Yeah, absolutely, right? So a good weekend with no rain after 8 consecutive weekends with a storm coming in California here. So I'm going to be busy in the garden, buddy.
You growing any good vegetables? Because I haven't been there in a couple of months.
Lots, although I've got one fear. I do fear that I have planted too many zucchini and yellow crookneck squash. I think I might send you a basket of them.
Well, if I still had my other house, I would have given you tons of avocados.
Oh, man, that was a great tree. That was a totally great tree.
Well, we got to go. It's time for NBC to do their news. So, listeners, the most important thing, Kristen, I want to tell you is
help our people on the planet blue.
And if you like green, you got to have blue. Good night, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Have a safe and dry, warm, nice, and the best weekend you can. Good night.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Good night.
NBC News on KCAA Loma Linda is sponsored by Teamsters Local 1932, protecting the future of working families. Teamsters1932.org.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brian Shook. Former President Trump is complaining that he can't.